Thank you for joining us on this episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett, where we examine current and emerging technologies through the lens of diversity and equality. So, hello, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett. Today, we got a topic of, I'll call it a basic topic, but we're going to have security tips. We're going to talk about like base level security stuff. In my mind, when I was thinking about like who this will be useful for, I was thinking like specifically my parents who probably have bad, bad password management skills. Hey, mom and dad, hope you're doing well today. They are definitely listening.
Hi, mom and dad. How are you?
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, so this will probably be a little bit basic for a lot of listeners, but I think it's also very like an important thing to cover and just sort of, you know, good security. Good security is better for everybody, like as things continue to advance, as we talked about in the Moore's Law thing.
Absolutely.
So I think one hot topic as far as like base security goes, and we were just sort of talking about this before, Rochelle, is using a password manager to manage your passwords. One big issue, and I'll call it like the early internet, but it's, you know, the internet 10, 15 years ago, was everybody you found a good password and you just sort of use that wherever you went. Which, you know, at the time it wasn't awful. And I was very guilty of it here. Like I still have like hard coded in my brain some of my earlier passwords that I just use for everything. And the problem with that was if a site was hacked and your password was leaked, well, not only like is your, you know, AOL password now compromised, so is your bank, so is your Google, so is everything else. So really the best practice became, well, you got to use multiple passwords. You got to use one password for every site so that if a site gets compromised, well, they've got that password, but they're not going to have your other passwords. Well, the problem there comes, well, now like you've got to remember a bunch of different passwords. And that sort of sucks as well, because remembering passwords is hard, especially if they're good long passwords. So when you use a like password manager, you can have the password manager pick out a long, complex password for you and just remember it. And now your pain has been shifted to using the password manager, which is arguably much more secure, but you know, hard in itself.
Equally challenging.
Yes, 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 absolutely.
And I think one of the interesting things about password managers, especially more recent password managers, is there's this little caveat that if you forget it, you might as well back the truck up to the front door and just start throwing things out the front door, because you know the company says, we don't know what that master password is you create. We don't know what it is. Although I do question that, because if I put in an incorrect password, it tells me it's not the right one, but maybe they're only checking for the correct one, but whatever. So there's that. And then there is, you know, the password manager in the cloud. So if you're on your iPad or you're on your phone or you're on your computer, that you don't have to track down the passwords all over the place, right? Mm-hmm. So if you put, like, say, for example, LastPass or 1Password, and they're a few of them out there, but if you create one of these things, and if you set it up so that it's, you know, on all your devices, so no matter where you are, so if you start typing in a website and ask you for a username and password, the little opportunity to use your master password is there. And I think that it's really interesting that for a lot of people that I know, that forgetting that password is just the nightmare that they just don't want to approach. Mm-hmm. And we in IT have been really religious about telling people not to write it down. At least if you write it down in a secure place, you know. So I remember back in the day, and you're probably too young to remember this, when ATM cards first came out, people used to write their PIN on the back of their ATM card.
Mm-hmm.
Lord have mercy. That's an accident in and of itself. But I think the problem with password managers is, again, like almost everything that we do in our society, we have not done a good job of educating people on how these things work and how to do them well.
Yeah, absolutely. And the ATM is a great analogy, because like writing your ATM pin code on your card is like, that's the exact same thing as writing like the password on your keyboard. Right. And I like, personally, I think, so having a long, a good long master password. And I also think it's sort of funny. We call it a master password as much as we talk about language and technology here. And this was another one that never really clicked for me. Is like, yeah, everybody calls it a master password. That's sort of messed up. But again, it's like embedded in our everyday thing, our everyday thoughts. So you mentioned like the password managers not knowing your master password, and technically they can authenticate that you are using the right password without knowing it by doing this thing called hashing, where like you type in your big long password and that big long password never actually goes to, you know, LastPass or anything like that. An encrypted version of that goes, and they can verify like that one-way encrypted thing, but they don't actually have to validate the password itself. That said, we are putting a lot of trust into the, like, things like the LastPass client that they are sending the hashed password and not the unhashed password, because there's nothing preventing them from doing that. Like, there are code audits, there are people can look at it, but if they want to change like their code or their web extension or whatever else, they could absolutely like change it so that you are sending an unencrypted password straight to them. So it is sort of, when they say they don't know your password, like, they're trying to do their best at not knowing our password, hopefully, but we are putting like a certain level of trust in them that they are going to do the right thing.
Absolutely. And I think that there's a lot to be said about these processes, right? Because like, how do we convey? So those of us that work in technology, we live by a fear of what could go wrong. We live by that fear all the time. You know, like if we're writing code or we're developing a project or a program or whatever it is, we're always aware of the vulnerabilities and risks that we are working with, right? So you've got a production system that's working fine and you're making changes to it, you know, and all of those things. For the community, for the lay community, it's a whole different thing. So, you know, if you were to tell like someone who's a cook, well, you know, if you put too much sugar or not enough flour, whatever it is, you could see how the recipe would go wrong. If you could explain technology in that same literal way, people would get it. But the way we speak, you know, like even, you know, although the racist term master, you know, for us, master password just means it's the top, the utmost password. Yeah. But the way we speak, so what's your master password? If you were to ask the average person that, i.e. no technology experience, what is my master password? Where do I find that? Because they know that they have a password, but it may not be in their minds the master password. So I think that it's always incumbent upon us to think about it from where the other person is. That old saying goes, meet people where they are. Yep. You know, telling people about how to do something securely means speaking in a language that they understand. So asking someone, you know, what's your master password? You know, what's the password that you use most? Or how do you access your email or whatever it is, might be a better way to say it. But coming at it from the lane we're in, we almost always use highly technical terms that may not convey to the people as we would like them to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And just sort of going along with that, never give someone that password.
Yes, yes, like, yes.
If they do ask, don't give it up. That should be something that you know and no one else.
Well, I got to tell you my two stories. Uh-huh. So a lot of people, and I'm not going to try to identify people, you know, they trust their admins or their secretaries with their passwords, right? Mm-hmm. And we try to convey to them, when you give them this password, they have access to your paycheck, how much you get paid, your health information, all of these things you're giving away when you give this information out. But then there's the part where, and you don't know this yet, you're still very, very wet behind the ears, but when you get to be my age, remembering things, like remembering what I did at 10 o'clock this morning, especially if it's minutia, it's not going to stick. So I have to write it down. I have tried to think about, how do I be a good servant in the space of a technologist and yet still understand the plight that people have? Because as you age, you know, dementia shows up, however it shows up, you know, the clutter of our mind, we've got so much going on, we forget things. So not giving it to people and not writing it down are, you know, two of our bedrock, you know, philosophies. But the problem is there must be somewhere where there's a little bit of give and take for the user. And unfortunately, the purebred lane of cybersecurity does not have that part written into it, right? Because we're now, every day, we're becoming more and more afraid, right? So we have these two ransomwares that happen. You remember back in the day, you get these viruses and these root viruses, and, you know, they would just literally destroy everything that you had. You know, we were coming along in that age to the point where we are right now, where we're almost fanatical about security. We are almost, you know, on high alert, right? You know, so don't use your work password to access your social media, because if they get your social media, they now have your work, which now compromises that organization. Mm-hmm. You know, and there must be some way to articulate that without making it seem onerous or overly burdensome on a non-technical person.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And like, while I do think like we shouldn't be writing our passwords down and keeping them under our keyboard, like for that main password that you use, like if it is like long and complicated, or even if it's not, like having it printed out and stored somewhere is not a bad thing. Like, right. You know, put it in your fire safe, put it somewhere secure. Like, you know, because personally, I've forgotten my, I had a LastPass password that I forgot at one point, and like all of that stuff just went away. I was like,
Same thing happened to me too.
Yeah. And like thinking back, I'm like, yeah, now like I would have written it down or, you know, stored it somewhere, and that would have saved me the pain. I will say at the same time though, resetting the passwords wasn't a huge deal. Like when I did lose those hundreds of passwords or whatever, I could still get into my Google because that was a password that I had memorized, and just going through and resetting the stuff that I cared about, it really wasn't the end of the world. Like not being able to get into my Google account, that would have been like super painful, but I don't think it would have been more painful, but I don't think that would have been the end of the world either. Like you can always get a new email address. Most stuff you can get reset. Like it may be a pain, but it's not the worst thing ever.
Absolutely. And you know, I think that, you know, in a lot of the education that I do in technology with where I work at and my friends and family and colleagues, you know, like, so the obvious things are, you know, your password should not be a dictionary word, right? It should not be something. So your password should not be Saturday. You know, that's just not a good password because it's easy to hack. Yep. And the other thing is your password should not be somebody's birthday or somebody's name, you know, your mother's name, your mother's birthday, you know, the very simple things. But then when you move to the other side of that, okay, so I want you to create a password that is going to secure you. And I often use the credit union card as my example. So I'm a member of State Employees Credit Union. And if you have a State Employees Credit Union debit card or credit card, debit cards always start 4327-3900. That's eight numbers. A credit card is 16 digits. So if you run that number through an algorithm and it's checking, so it, you know, the second, so it's got eight, so we get to the nine number. And I often refer to war games about this, or the computers playing a game to find the codes to launch the missiles. Mm-hmm. So these hackers and people out there can run that password, I mean, that credit card number through an algorithm. So is the first number four, number nine, four? No, is it five? And it just keeps going until it gets it. And whatever it is, it then turns that number. And it's only got eight more numbers to go. So when you create a password, if you think about it like this, so if you create a password of Saturday, and so the algorithm looks and it finds Saturday. Okay, so how many letters or how many words start with S? So that's the biggest task it's got to do, is find all the letters to start. But then when it gets the A, then how many words? So you keep narrowing it down till it's easily to hack or crack. So I think that, you know, the tips that we try to give people is to think like the criminal, think like the bad person. What is it that they're trying to do? And so if you have a password like Saturday as your password, think about of a machine, now not a person, because, you know, if you and I were trying to, you know, do those algorithms in our head, it would probably take us a couple of weeks or something to do it. But a machine can do that in seconds. Mm-hmm. So as you're creating your passwords and thinking about creating a password, think about it from the perspective of how would a criminal get this information, and why would they want it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And like sort of going off of that, in general, the longer your password is, the harder better. It is going to be to crack. Yeah, yeah. Like the longer it is and the more random it is and the less real words in there. Because like real words are so easy to crack. Like it's like the snap of a finger. Whereas once you get to non-real words or, you know, multiple words
strung together.
Yeah, yeah. That gets much, much harder. I was reading a study where they were saying even if you have like a bunch of real words thrown together, like even that, a dedicated hacker with enough money can crack that. Like that's going to get past like, you know, 99.9% hackers, but you know, if somebody has enough processing power, they can get that as well. Like if you really, really, really want the most secure uncrackable, it's got to be completely random. And it's got to be like 16 to 32 characters, which, you know, humans can't remember that. So that's, you know,
plus not only that, when you add the age of the person, so you were talking about your parents, you know, so I'm 62 years old. I mean, when I was younger, I had a photographic memory. If I saw it, I knew it. You know, I saw it. Now, if I see it, I don't remember what I saw. So like, what was that? So, you know, the whole process of passwords is challenging in our society. And it's challenging because one of the age of our society, two, our familiarity. And we like to think people are techies now. They are not. They know how to use social media. They know how to do email. They know the basics. But when you think about this from the pure standpoint of information technology, technology is moving faster than those of us that are aging out of the system. So I'm a baby boomer. And so I am on the tail end of the life cycle that we're in right now for that generation, right? So I'm in my 60s. So there's that part. So for young people, if you created a really complex 32 character or longer password, they may be able to retain that, or they may create some synergy with the password. So if you like rap music, you might have rap music and your favorite song combined somewhere with a mixture of letters and numbers and things like that. But when you're my age, that's harder to do. So I remember the things that I use often. So I know my high level password, I know what that is. So I don't need to, but it's because I use it every single day, all yes. day long. If you tell your browser to remember your password, guess what that means for you? You no longer have to know your password because your browser now remembers it, but that's the vulnerability there too. Because now if your browser, if Firefox gets hacked or Chrome or whomever, they have your yep. passwords, and they may have all of your passwords. They may have your credit card numbers. So when you think about this from the most basic framework, you know, the convenience that technology offers us, which we all love and we enjoy, also is our downfall in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I completely agree. And I would also add, like, practicing with your password, I think, is important. Like, when I recently switched from one password manager to another one, I was like, oh Lord, I've got to like think of a new, like, super long password. And like, I had a hard time remembering it for the first week, but I wrote it down, locked it away, and practiced with it. Like if I couldn't remember it, I'd pull that out, put it in. Yep. And eventually, you know, it stuck and I could rip that thing up and, you know, hopefully I won't need it again, but we'll yep. see.
I want to add one more thing to this. So mm-hmm. one of the interesting things, so my birth mother just recently died. And what's really interesting about that is we don't like to think or talk about death. But, you know, if you go have your will done, there are new terms in your will. And one is who maintains your social media and your digital footprint? Who owns that if you die? So, for example, if I were to die right now, my son would get all my digital whatever. But then what becomes of that? Because what I've been able to find through some research, I'm working on a little document, a paper, and a lot of people die and their accounts persist because the companies don't kick people out for lack of activity. They may move your account to a lesser, you know, so on the cloud, typically people put their usernames and all that stuff in a place and it's easy to get back because they cache it. They store it so you don't have to go look for it all the time. But mm-hmm. if you haven't accessed your account, say in a year, it may not be in that front and center cache. It may be, you know, 18, 19, 20 levels back that they've got to go find it. Yeah. But when you die, you leave your digital footprint with or without an owner to take care of it, to close down your accounts, to, you know, do that. And so the vulnerability that I'm trying to identify there is that now you are not managing your accounts. And so if your account, if your the site or your account is hacked, you don't know it. And if it's tied to anything else, so for example, you, like many people, it's the password to your bank account, it's the password to your work and all these things, it's vulnerable. And for those people who are left to manage your affairs, they got to figure out how to do that.
Absolutely. And that brings up an interesting point. Like, what would you want to happen to your social media, like, once you passed away? Like, I don't know what I would want to happen with mine. Like, I guess I haven't really given it much thought, but I guess I would just want it to sort of like sit around how it is. Like, you know, I don't know if I would want it deleted or kept up or moved to an in memoriam, or.
I want mine deleted. I don't, I mean, I'm not that interesting socially, you know, like I have a Twitter account. I have a LinkedIn account.
I would definitely
account.
Disagree with that, Rochelle, but go ahead.
but I'm not, I don't, you know, so I haven't logged in Facebook since probably 2012. Last time I accessed Facebook. I'm sure I have an Instagram account. I don't know when the last time I logged into that. But what I put out there is only my thoughts and opinions. They're not like, you know, like I'm putting out, you know, theories and ideas which somebody can move forward. They're just what I'm thinking at that particular time. So
but those are still important.
But you know, would they be important? Like if someone came across my profile and I've been dead 20 years, maybe what I was talking about 20 years ago was just, okay, uselessness. It doesn't apply anymore. But my point just is, it's like, you know, technologists who are in the business of technology should be purveyors of information to the community at large. And that is speaking in plain speak technology, not acronyms, you know, and we all are guilty of this. We just rattle off acronyms like we're in, you know, in a movie or something, just rattling off and not recognizing that the people listening to us have already started tuning out because you've said too many of those acronyms that I don't know what they mean.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I think it's very important that when we talk about tips we want to give people, we should talk about them in the way that they will understand them. We should talk about them in ways that they can apply them. So you just told an 80-year-old woman to create a 32-character password. First of all, if you told me that, I'd delete you from my friend list. I would unfriend you, whatever I needed to do not to talk to you anymore, because there ain't no way in the world I'm going to remember a 32-character password at this age of my life. Although I may still be reading my email, you know, communicating with my family. I might not. So you've got to have some way to make this attractive to people without putting fear with it. And that's what we do in technology a lot. So this ransomware has, everybody in the world is terrified right now. I can't tell you a single person I've talked to who, first, they don't even know what it means, other than they know that ransom means somebody took something from me, they want money for it. So that actually adding the word "ware" to the end of it, it's kind of discombobulating to people. What does that mean exactly? And Drew, I can't wait for you to explain to us why we have ransomware versus just ransom. You know, you know, that part, but more importantly, that they understand that we are not trying to frighten anyone. We're trying to keep them safe, and we must do so in a way that is productive and supportive of where they are. So, you know, if the person's not technologist, you know, they don't work in technology, or all they do is read emails, we have to put it in a way that they can absorb it.
That's a great point, because I think a lot of times I think about security as, I want to keep the scary stuff out. And a lot of that is driven by fear, which is not a great thing, or maybe not fear, but scary things, things that could scare you, things that you don't want to happen. Like the bad stuff, the stuff that makes you start sweating.
Right. And so when you think about this, if somebody says to you, well, we're going to ransomware, we're going to take away all your electricity, we're going to take away all your gas, we're going to take away your meat, that's frightening to people. But because one, they don't know what to do about it. So how do I protect myself from this? But then the other part of that statement is, if the company, i.e. Equifax or the gas company that had this happen to them, whatever it is, if they haven't done a job to protect themselves and me, how can I?
Absolutely. Yeah. If the main pipeline of gas across the country can't keep themselves safe, what chance do the rest of us have?
Right. And again, that goes back to educating, right? They need people to educate them in plain speak. So people, so we had a lot of talk about data breaches, right? We talked about data breaches for like 5 or 6 years straight. That's all we said, data breaches. Like, everybody in America has been breached, probably everybody in the world. But you know, if you got an account, you've probably been breached by something. And there's this site called I've Been Pawned. Yep. You know, there are all these tools that tell you, and if you subscribe to them, they send you something almost every hour telling you you've been breached somewhere. So now we introduced your turn, Drew, ransomware to them. So now I'm no longer breached, but I'm going to be being subjected to ransomware. So what is ransomware, Drew?
Yeah, so ransomware is, it's a relatively new thing. And so back in the olden day, when your computer would get hacked, people would just do stupid stuff with it. They would delete all your files. They would deface your website. They would do things that were like, I would call it very annoying. Or they may, you know, like hack your company and steal your data quietly, which I will say, like, all that is bad. But this new trend of ransomware is much more devious, where instead of you click something bad, and in the old days, it would steal your data or, you know, embarrass you or do something stupid. Now it says, okay, Drew clicked this file that he shouldn't have. And what this file is going to do is it's going to take every file on his computer and it's going to encrypt it in a way that he can no longer access it. And it also may reach out to everything that he has access to, like all of his backups or the computer that's next to him that has access or the server that he was hitting yesterday. And it's going to encrypt all of that. And it's going to spread its way through the entire company so that your data still exists like on your computers, but it's encrypted, which is just, it's pretty much means it's scrambled up and you can't get it unscrambled unless you pay a ransom to the attackers, which like really sucks. It sucks in multiple ways. One way is the way that these things are encrypted mean like encryption is mathematically sound, right? It means that your data can be scrambled and can only be unscrambled if you get a key, which is just another piece of data. And for the good ones, like there's really no way of unscrambling it without that key. Like it is a mathematical fact that you cannot unscramble your files until this private key is turned over to you. And to get that private key, you have to pay the ransomers a pretty large amount usually of untraceable money, which is Bitcoin or some sort of other cryptocurrency. You know, I think it's bad for a couple reasons. One is if you pay that ransom, you are now funding the next cyber attack or the next piece of ransomware. And it's going to encourage more and more and more, which is really what the trend has been. It's like people can't get their data. So they go and they pay this huge fee. The Colonial Pipeline people paid, I think, like $4 million or something. Like it was a huge amount of cryptocurrency. And then they get the key, and then you can start decrypting your data if the ransomers are legitimate. Like there's also a chance you're going to pay them that money and they're just going to say, eh, sorry. Like,
sorry. Right. Yeah, absolutely.
You're out of luck. And in case of the Colonial Pipeline people, so they paid the money, they got their private key, but the decryption protocol was way too slow for them and they couldn't use it. So right. I think they ended up using like, you know, they probably used it to get back a couple like really important files. And then the rest, they just restored from backup. There's even.
So talk about that for a minute. So back in the day, we used to package up our data on DASD drive, these massive storage drives or on tapes. And then we send them off to someplace like Iron Mountain or somewhere else to send them off. So they weren't on site. So in case our building caught on fire or something like that. So why do we move away from that model of backing up, ensuring that we have a duplicate copy of our data? And back in my day, I used to call that disaster recovery. Mm-hmm. That's no longer a word anymore. But.
Oh, yeah. No, I would say it's still a word. And I think it still applies. And the answer is money. So having disaster recovery and offsite backups really give you like a high level of confidence. Like if I have a laptop and I just hook a USB hard drive up to it and I start making backups every day, technically that is a backup. The problem there is that if I get ransomware on my laptop, it can easily encrypt or destroy all of my backups as well because they're online. They're hooked up to my laptop. They're live. they are very convenient for me to handle, but they are online and can easily be destroyed. With offsite and offline backups, that's where extra money comes in and extra security. So, you know, you're probably not going to make a tape backup of your laptop, but you may send it off somewhere, right? Like I'm going to, maybe I use, what's Apple's one Apple Drive or what iCloud.
Time Machine was one backup where you backed up to an external drive and then iCloud is the other.
Yeah. Yeah. So ideally you want to back things up and then get them like stored away somewhere, right? Like maybe every month you want to make a copy, unplug it from your computer, power it down, shove it somewhere. Or in the case of like data centers, they usually put them on tapes and then ship the tapes off to like a super secure location that if you need to restore them, somebody's going to get in a truck and like drive it to your data center and you're going to shove it in a tape machine and start reading the data back. But that is like, it's expensive and it's not something that everybody can do. But if you want like, you know, full security, then you do have to have something like that. So I'm very happy with our podcast today, Rochelle. I had four things to talk about and I was sort of worried it wasn't going to be enough and we have only made it through one. So we will do, we'll continue this up next week with part two. And I hope everybody joins us for that one because we have way more tech tips. So thank you very much for listening.
Absolutely. And we want you to understand this in plain English. We're not trying to make this complex. And if you have any feedback or suggestions, please let us know.
Yes, absolutely. ImmanentTeachnology@gmail.com. We would love to hear like any feedback you have. So thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to Immanent Teachnology. If you like the show, please review, subscribe, and recommend us to your friends and family. We'd love to hear feedback from you as well. You can email us at ImmanentTeachnology@gmail.com. See y'all soon.